just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer or fall, all you have to do is call. Yes, I'll be there. You've got a friend. Get out of my pub.
Get out of my pub right now!
I'm not going anywhere.
I said get out!
Hello and welcome to Get Out of My Pod. I'm Una.
I'm Nav.
How are you, Nav?
Yeah, good. Obviously, sad week. You heard our special intro this week, which was a duet of Barbara Windsor and Steve McFadden, aka Peggy and Phil.
Can you believe that's what it was, listeners?
I know. And we thought it was, we discovered that little gem from the Walford Weekly, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. And we thought, hey, you know what? This is the time for the world to hear that. Now we've had the sad passing of Barbara Windsor.
I just couldn't believe it. You sent me the link to it like a couple of days ago, and I thought it was going to be one of those YouTube videos where they'd like cut out all of the words out of like lines from EastEnders or something, and it was going to be like some bizarre like mashup of that song. And then it was just actually Steve McFadden like singing "You've Got a Friend" with Barbara Windsor. Couldn't believe it.
It's kind of cute, right?
He's got a very nice voice, you know. That was lovely.
And yeah, you know, I thought it was quite a poignant thing to listen to in this current situation.
But I immediately like had to know why and how did this happen. So I looked it up, and it's on Barbara Windsor's album from the 90s called You've Got a Friend.
A multi-talented woman.
Yeah, incredible. So it's a whole album of covers, and there's even a track featuring Mike Reed.
The late, great Frank Butcher.
Yeah, unfortunately, couldn't find a recording. So if anyone's got that CD at home and wants to send us that track, that would be much appreciated.
Send it in. What's your overriding memory of Peggy from EastEnders?
I mean, for me, Peggy just was EastEnders, wasn't she? Like,
she
She was just like the absolute star of the 90s, which I guess a lot of people would say was the heyday of EastEnders. She's like, she is my overriding memory of EastEnders. But I was thinking about this, and actually one of the things that stuck really strongly for me was when she had cancer, because I feel like up until that point, everything had been quite theatrical. Like the storylines that she had been quite theatrical, like lots of very dramatic, like obviously there was like Frank's affair. There was like all of the drama with Grant and Phil. And she was like such a larger than life character and played that so brilliantly. And then they did this cancer storyline, and it was really quite like, it was very poignant. It was very sad. It was quite kind of like muted as a storyline. And it was the first time we really got to see that side of her as an actor. That really sticks out for me as a moment in EastEnders.
Yeah, she played that so sensitively. And also then, you know, for her kind of final scenes as well, when the cancer had come back, I think she smashed it again. For me, yeah, that definitely is up there. But the kind of most iconic Peggy moments are always the scenes with Pat.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we often remember the famous scene of her slapping Frank and Pat at the pub. I think it was a special Christmas episode. But actually, the episode that stands out for me, and I only saw it again recently, was there was an episode, literally just a two-hander, of her and Pat at Pat's house when Frank had gone missing, and Frank was with Peggy by this point, and Pat was with Roy, and Roy went to go find Frank. And it was just stunning. Like as a two-hander, like they carried it incredibly well. Again, I think we've spoken about this with other characters. It's like two actors who just know exactly what their characters would do.
Yeah.
And it was relatively early on in kind of Peggy's tenure. So like to kind of get a sense of exactly who a character is like that quickly, I think is kind of real testament to the actor. And yeah, both of them, and obviously, you know, we're talking about Barbara Windsor in particular, like, yeah, just really captured like what EastEnders had been about for a long time, which is these kind of strong women having to navigate difficult circumstances, occasionally in competition with each other, but also like a real shared understanding of where they were coming from. And you know, Barbara Windsor played that role, like, you know, she was kind of second to no one else in terms of playing that kind of role.
Yeah, definitely. That also reminds me, like, you talking about that, the specific brilliance of Pat and Peggy together, that also reminds me of the episode with the ice cream van where they just got really drunk in the ice cream van.
They were just absolutely awesome.
That was like, definitely a favourite Peggy moment for me.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I think EastEnders is often accused of not doing comedy as well as, like, Coronation Street or some of the other soaps. But Peggy could do comedy when she wanted to.
Oh, Barbara Windsor was absolutely brilliant at that. There's so many like fantastic Peggy comedy moments.
She was absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, obviously, you know, we've lost a legend, but you know, left with a lot of good EastEnders memories from her time there.
Definitely, yeah, a giant of the square.
Absolutely. And obviously, we don't really have any other EastEnders news, and I don't think anything else is as important. So as we don't have predictions, are we going to go straight into it this week?
Let's get into it. This week was so good.
Right. You know, the aftermath of that kind of storyline can be done quite badly. But I think in terms of kind of keeping us guessing, I think, yeah, they just played it so well.
Oh my God, it was so exciting. I absolutely loved it.
Right. Shall we do what we did last week, though, and like start off with a couple of non-Who Did Ian storylines before we get into the meat of the week?
Yeah, there was a couple of things in there. I think almost everything kind of tied in to the Ian situation. And there's just so much in there to talk about. I'm so excited. But yeah, a couple of things that didn't. We saw Kat and Kush come back this week. That was, I was really relieved about that because I started to think towards the end of the week last week, I was like, Kush isn't gone, is he? Because we knew he was leaving. And I was like, oh my God, if they just like snuck him off the show without a fanfare. So I was very relieved to see him back.
Poor Kush has had such a chaotic few weeks though. He went from being just a kind of, you know, Slater family man, you know, keeping things together while Kat was away, to developing a gambling addiction. Obviously, I know that happened over lockdown. Taking part in a robbery, and now he's in a prison cell.
Oh, poor old Kush.
Yeah. It's just wild, though. Absolutely wild.
I mean, it's the sort of stuff that happens if you move in with the Slaters. I mean, of course, none of that was their fault, but it's just the energy you get, really, from that house, I think.
He lived in Whitney's attic for, like, a few days as well.
Oh, yeah. The attic days.
A mental few weeks for Kush.
Yeah, has been completely nuts, hasn't it? Yeah. I mean, I was relieved to see him hand himself in. I think it was a good move. What do you reckon?
I think so, yeah. He's not cut for a life of crime and being on the run. And
no.
It's just, you know, it's not who he is and it's not who any of us want him to be. But I do hope, though, that's not how he leaves. Like, I don't think he committed any particularly serious offence anyway. But B, like, it's just not really fair to the character to, like, suddenly kind of take him down this path. I think he deserves better.
Yeah, yeah. It made a bit more sense for everything. It kind of, like, settled it a little bit. I was glad that Kat was kind of back on the square.
I'm wondering, Kush handing himself in, I think, is also possibly a cover for him not being on screen for a while.
Yeah, maybe. So do you think, what, is he taking a break and then he's going to leave? Or what do you think's going to happen then?
That's a good question. I literally just came up with that idea now. Now I'm thinking that he isn't actually going to be on a break. But we know he's going to leave. And I just kind of wondered what the run-up to that would look like.
I think maybe it's setting him up for something dramatic over Christmas time, because it's Arthur's birthday on Christmas Eve. Like, he specifically said he needed to be out to see Arthur for Christmas. So I wonder if like that is going to be a key part of what happens over Christmas.
But I heard he's not leaving for like a year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So we're just looking out for this thing that is ages away.
Well, I think it was fair for us to look out for it when we thought it was going to be the gambling storyline, because I imagine most of us kind of expected that would be a long-term thing with kind of like peaks and troughs and like turns and what have you. But they escalated it so quickly that it's a bit like, I think they can revisit it, but I think maybe they went a little too fast with that storyline.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Should we listen to a little clip of Jean chatting about Kush? You know, I love those moments where we've got all the Slaters in one room having a conversation.
Let's do it.
Well, I think it's lovely. Must be nice to have a break from being on the run. And Arthur's going to love having his dad home for Christmas. Did you go in him a nice cap? Money asking.
Kush isn't home, he's banged up.
Only temporarily.
Well, I ain't stopping. Why? Because he's weak, isn't he, Jean? How can I hang about? If the old Bill put pressure on him, God knows what he'll say about me.
Doesn't mean you have to bottle it.
Kat, you need to go over there and you need to square it with Phil, otherwise we're all going to get it in the neck. Don't you think we've had enough hassle with that lot lately?
How can I square it? You know, I think Wolford's gone down the pan. Literally a criminal round every corner. Never mind what's happened to Ian.
Kush backfooted me in all states, yeah? What am I supposed to tell Phil? He didn't tell me, he didn't talk to me, he didn't text, he just up and left.
Well, that's because you're very persuasive. Some people might call it intimidating, but maybe he thought action was the safest option.
Oh, Jean. A little kind of quiet common sense there kind of feeding through into the Slater household.
I quite like how Jean's just fallen into this role of like constantly trying to pretend that everything's normal.
Yeah, I know. But I think she's kind of got that role while at the same time slightly just kind of resigned to like everything,
yeah.
Like, and just be like, you know what, this is now who my family are, and you know, here's what it is, and yeah, fair enough, Jean.
We're enjoying it. It's a breath of fresh air.
I have a lot of time for that attitude. I think it's a good. If you're in a situation in which you know the people around you are always going to be doing dumbass things, I think she's adopted exactly the right kind of attitude.
It's an attitude that I aspire.
Yeah.
I aspire to develop.
Yeah, chill.
Healthy for all of us.
Right.
Yeah. So the other storyline that was kind of unconnected to the whodunit around Ian was we saw a bit more of Honey and Jay this week.
Yeah, because that kind of took a bit of a backseat. We got the resolution of the assault storyline on Honey. Were we supposed to read more into her like low key reaction, or were we supposed to be a bit like, you know what? She's kind of come to terms with it. She'll deal with it like in time, and not everything needs to be a super dramatic reaction.
The latter is sort of what I thought it was, and it was an opportunity for a nice little moment between her and Jay. They looked at each other for just that bit longer than you would.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I think it's the latter as well. And I'm kind of glad that it's the latter because...
Yeah, same.
You know, that's often what happens. And, you know, it will bother her. I'm sure it'll bother her for like a long time. But she is a single mom. She's got kids with special needs, and she hasn't got time to fall apart, to be frank.
True, yeah. And not everyone does.
Right.
Like that. Sometimes that stuff is life-changing and dramatic, and sometimes it's kind of like just another thing that happens.
We are resilient. Yeah. We're resilient people.
Very
and
true.
We get through a lot of stuff.
So can we talk a little bit about this William shoplifting situation?
For Billy? Was he shoplifting for Billy?
I didn't really understand the whole thing. And I also was like, why is Honey not more worried that her child is not being fed? Because she seemed to like react as if it was just like a kid that wasn't hers.
Okay, so my memory of it, and you watched it more recently than me, my memory of it is that his... explanation was that he was getting food for Billy, who'd been struggling to feed himself or something? I don't understand.
Yeah, I guess I just like, I felt like Hunter reacted as if it was all happening to a family that was like unconnected to her. And I feel like if the father of my children was like so broke that he couldn't feed himself and my son then felt pressured to go and steal food on behalf of him, I probably would have like a slightly more worried reaction to that entire situation.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, on occasion, EastEnders need to give a bit more thought as to like the kind of, you know, these storylines that are used to kind of move other storylines forward.
Yeah.
And I think you can't let that stuff go. Like, if you're going to, if you want something to basically like feed into like Jay and Honey getting closer, it needs to be more trivial than, you know, food insecurity.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it could have been another kid who had done the shoplifting or something. Because, yeah, it seems like the reason for that happening is so Honey can start whatever it is that she's doing around, like, feeding hungry kids. And then, like, presumably Jay is going to be, like, supportive towards her, maybe in a similar way that Max was to Linda on her business idea.
Also, EastEnders, read the room. Like, I don't know when you filmed it, but, like, Marcus Rashford did, like, the biggest charitable campaign of the year trying to feed kids who don't have food, and you're like, ha ha ha, Will was a little naughty scally taking some food from the Minute Mart, and you're like, I don't think you've understood the seriousness of this.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll do that a little bit better if Honey does go down this sort of route of trying to do something about the problem, is that hopefully they'll like treat it in a bit more of a, I don't know, a bit more of a serious way. But yeah,
there we go. Marcus would not be happy. Well, there we go.
So one thing I did really enjoy was how much Honey was just like gossiping about everything. That's a side about Honey that I find really funny, is just her like standing in the Minute Mart, like being an absolute gossip on the square.
Yeah, and I've missed that. And I sometimes don't like when they make some of these characters like a little more kind of, you know, I get people go through life experiences and it can, you know, make you a little bit more jaded and what have you. But like, also it's a soap and I don't really want people to become downbeaten by life to the point where like they lose like that slightly fun side of them. So like, yeah, yeah, you know, Honey was always known as being one of those, like, not exactly like Dot, but, you know, one of those who starts the sentence with like, I'm not one to gossip, but like, you are, and we love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, definitely enjoyed that. Right. So those are the two things I think that we saw that weren't kind of directly tied in to who the hell tried to kill Ian.
Right, let's get into it then.
Let's get into it. So should we look at our list of suspects from last week?
Yeah, have you got the ranking still?
I've got the ranking still. Quite interesting looking at it this week.
I have a new person to add to the list, but I'll add it at the appropriate moment. But
oh my god!
I know, I'm excited. But should we start from the bottom and go up?
Start from the bottom. So at the bottom, I think we actually kind of had two people tied. Is we had Ben, and then I think also Stuart was kind of in the same league, and maybe Stuart and Rainey actually.
Yeah, I think we were bang on that. I don't think it's any of them.
I don't think Ben did it. I've got a little sneaking suspicion about Ben. I wonder if I should save that for my predictions at the end.
Ooh. Well, let's talk about Stuart and Rainey then. I think we were being led to believe that Stuart either had something to do with it or he thought Rainey had something to do with it. And I think through a really sweet moment at the end of the week, we got kind of confirmation that it was neither of them.
Can I just say that the Stuart and Rainey story arc this week just delighted me.
Oh, God. Do you worry, though, that, like, you know, where we are when it comes to Stuart and Rainey is so perfect and they keep on feeding it? So, like, whenever...
What's going to happen?
Right, do you know what I mean, right? And it's like, even this week, it was like, you know, them's coming up with exactly the same story for each other's alibi.
It was beautiful.
But, like, I'm really worried either that we're going to get tired of it. I suspect not. We might get tired of it. Or the writers will think we're going to get tired of it and do something really stupid.
Well, it is EastEnders, and the higher you get, the further you fall. That's the rule of the show. You can't be happy without some, like, awful thing happening to you. So I do kind of think it's just a matter of time But I was really nervous this week because on Monday, obviously, Rainey had gone missing.
Mm.
And I was like, no, no, please don't do this to us. I'm not ready for them to not be happy. And so for her to come back and for them to resolve the storyline at the end of the week with that just like lovely scene where they'd both given the exact same alibi just made me so happy.
By the way, I thought Callum was going to point out when Rainey explained her alibi to him that Deal or No Deal hasn't been on TV for a very long time.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
I've got no idea what's on TV. Are there not repeats or something?
Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, you'd have to look for a repeat of Deal or No Deal.
But I wonder if whoever wrote that line is just like me and just like doesn't watch TV, has no idea what's on, just picks something highly from like the early 2000s.
Actually, you know what, though? So as much as we're kind of saying that Stuart and Rainey as suspects has maybe been ruled out, technically, they weren't real alibis. Neither of them actually know for sure what the other were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some mystery in there. We don't know what it is.
Right. So yeah, they're not completely off the list in my mind then.
I think there's a possibility that Rainey did the graffiti or Stuart did the graffiti or something.
Yeah.
And I think it is going to be one of those, like when we finally get the reveal, I think everyone's going to have played some kind of like minor part.
Exactly. In
the 100%. Whole story.
Yeah, exactly. Which is
brilliant.
Okay, so should we move up the list?
Just want to quickly say on that, I mean, I think we'll probably get into Callum a bit more later on, but like, he's such a shit brother.
Yeah, he
like,
is.
He's just been so completely absent for like all of Stuart's difficult times, and Stuart's so supportive of him, and like he didn't even really like say anything properly when Stuart explained what happened with Rainey and the baby and everything. It's just like, you're so rubbish.
Okay, I'm going to defend Callum a little bit in that, like, being Stuart's brother probably has come with a little kind of PTSD that, like, when, like, anything comes up with Stuart, it probably triggers a bit of anxiety and a bit of kind of just worry on, like, Callum's part that, like, he, you know, on its own, it maybe looks like he's not being very supportive, but it's probably a defense mechanism.
All right, yeah, fair enough. I guess if Stuart had been my brother for my whole life and done all the terrible things that he did do, maybe I'd be a little bit slower to offer my support.
It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but like if you've seen a friend or a partner, like when they meet their family and, you know, they maybe are not very nice to a sibling or even a parent, you're looking at it and going like, they're being so nice, why are you an asshole? But then you don't have the history right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, all right, fair enough. I'll give Callum a break on that.
Yeah, I know we hate Cock Callum, but like I'm gonna give him a pass on family tensions.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so moving up the list, interestingly, next on the list is Tina.
Oh yeah, so we know she had a part to play, but yeah, we also know she wasn't the person who attacked him in the pub.
She was never going to be the person, was she?
No, no. I mean, the thing is that interestingly enough, like, you know, if you're looking at it from a legal perspective, like, you know, she could have played a contributing part to like him being in hospital, because we don't know whether it was like the blow that he received in the pub that was the overriding reason for him to end up in hospital, or whether it was a combination of her pushing him onto the table. I'm not saying she's to blame because it was a fight.
Yeah, but like even if he didn't end up in hospital, she still assaulted him, hasn't she?
Right, exactly.
Like yeah, it's quite funny that they don't seem to be interested in that part of the story, but yeah. Fair enough.
I know. But yeah, we didn't learn an awful lot more. There's obviously the possible pizza delivery alibi. Do you think that's going to pan out for her?
Maybe like at the last minute or something. I don't think it will for a while. I feel like we've got a little bit longer of Tina being a suspect and having a difficult time.
What do you make of Gray so kind of readily being, you know, there to help with people's cases?
To be quite honest, Gray is a bizarre character at the moment.
Yeah.
And I don't think they know what they're doing with him.
No.
I'm just like, what is going on here? Come on.
Yeah, it's like the whole Chantel storyline has kind of disappeared, and it's almost like he's forgotten how to be a lawyer.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. Like, because didn't he have a job before? He didn't get sacked from his job, did he? So like, right. What's going on? Why has he even got time to be like representing Tina? What law is he in? What area of law is he in?
Gangster law now. That's why he practices.
Because if he's a criminal lawyer, barrister or whatever, like, you don't make that much money. Like, it doesn't line up with having a big fancy house. So, yeah, I don't know. They've not thought it through, I don't think.
They haven't. They haven't at all. But anyway, you know, Grey's around. I'm not... I saw, and this is not me, you know, putting any shade on the Walford Weekly lot, but I saw that they were quite angry about the idea of Chantel not getting justice in inverted commas, and that it would be a real kind of disservice to, you know, victims of domestic violence. I don't know if, like... I don't know how I feel about that. Do you think EastEnders has a responsibility to tie that storyline in a way that gives a, you know, a real strong sense of justice for Chantel and a real punishment for Grey?
I mean, not to get too deep on it, but I guess that depends on what your definition of justice is, doesn't it? If you think that the problem of domestic violence is solved by people going to prison, then maybe that makes you feel like we need that kind of justice in this storyline. I think it would be a shame. I'd be worried if we just kind of see Grey continue to kind of bumble along on the square and like, and to be this sort of like occasionally quite sympathetic character, and for what he's done to just not be addressed. Like, that would really, really concern me. I don't think they're going to do that. But yeah, I don't think that there's necessarily a responsibility for Grey to be arrested and convicted and be punished, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a tricky one, right? Like, you, to be honest, I err on the side that, like, of saying that, you know what, on occasion people get away with stuff and get away with some really horrible stuff. And sometimes people who then never do it again. I think it would be rare in this kind of circumstance, if that's your kind of personality, that it wouldn't manifest itself in another relationship or another relationship after that. And we are getting these kind of sneak previews of like,
yeah,
him losing control and stuff. And I think that is a kind of realistic portrayal. But at the same time, it's perfectly possible and realistic that he doesn't get punished by the law. And in fact, that he doesn't really get any consequences. Now, I don't want that to happen. But as you say, at the same time, I don't know if, you know, it would be a huge setback for those kind of campaigning on this issue if EastEnders didn't do a kind of neat storyline where he gets like, you know, 40 years in prison and everybody feels relief because of it.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think often when things are tied up that neatly, particularly when we're talking about domestic violence, is that it almost does a disservice to the issue, is it doesn't really delve into the kind of like the details and the societal context around why that stuff happens, why people behave in that way and why they get away with it for so long. And when you do that thing of like tying something up with like the bad person gets convicted and they go to prison, then we kind of lose all of the exploration of the driving factors around domestic violence that actually aren't just about like individuals just being bad and needing to be locked up. So yeah, I don't think that it would be irresponsible to kind of not have him be traditionally punished. I do think it'd be irresponsible to just drop the storyline at this point and not do that exploration of like, why did Grey treat her like that? What is it that's gone on for him, and what's going on in like the society around him that let him do that to another person?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think in a lot of respects, EastEnders were doing quite a good job. So like the fact of, you know, his status as a lawyer, his kind of income, yeah, the way that Karen, you know, would interact with Grey. As you say, like all of the circumstances around it, I think they were doing quite a good job. They've now, as you say, turned him into this character, which, yeah, it's just really weird. We never see any scenes of him with Karen anymore, which is a real shame.
Yeah.
And so fine to take a pause while the Ian stuff takes the foreground for a bit. But as you say, hope they don't drop it. Fingers crossed it comes back soon.
Yeah, they need to do something with it. So come on, 2021, wrap it up, EastEnders.
Absolutely.
So moving up on our list, shall we?
Let's do it.
So next we've got Max.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I think we were supposed to maybe think that he'd got a strong alibi and that he was with Linda the whole night. But then obviously we found out that he wasn't with Linda the whole night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. Also, was he with Linda for some of the night?
As in, were they having sex?
Were they shagging? Yeah.
Yeah. So coy of you to say it in that way. Like,
were they banging?
I think we were. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
I love Linda and Max together. Like, I'm sorry to my one true love, Mick, but I love Linda and Max as a couple.
Yeah, I think, yeah, agreed. They would make a really good couple. And in other circumstances, like, I would definitely be championing, you know, at least a bit of a fling, a proper fling between Max and Linda.
Yeah, I know. It's such a shame that we can't have that because of COVID.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Max is leaving and, you know, maybe it wouldn't be appropriate with what Mick's going through. But,
yeah,
you know.
Do you know, this is a bit of an aside, but it's actually just occurred to me that I think I strongly believe that the EastEnders actors should be prioritised for vaccines so that they can stop having to distance and not touch each other and we can go back to having proper EastEnders again.
Yeah, and obviously, by extension of that, EastEnders podcasters as well.
Yeah, so that we can do this in the same room.
Yeah, this has been a very difficult year.
Extremely difficult.
Exactly. The delays we've had to contend with this year with our
The latency.
Too much. It's too much for professional podcasters like ourselves.
So we're saying Max didn't do it.
I'm not saying that, no.
Oh, so you still think it's a possibility it could have been Max?
Yeah. Where are you?
I don't know. It's almost like feels a bit too obvious because he, you know, he's just got like such a strong motive. Like Ian had just screwed him over. He really wanted his revenge and he was like, I could kill you. So it feels a little bit like too blatant. But there's also like, there's not much else going on for Max other than the thing with Linda, and we know that he wasn't with Linda for the whole night. So, like, what else would he have been doing?
Yeah, exactly. And what's that thing, Occam's razor? Like, you know, it's the simplest explanation. So, why not?
All right. So, it's a maybe for Max.
We can differ on this. Like, if you're ruling him out, that might create a bit of exciting podcast tension for the listeners.
I mean, I'm still pretty set on, like, don't want to just whiz up the list without going past everyone, but like I'm still pretty set on your explanation last week, to be honest.
Okay, all right, well let's see how we kind of, you know, carry on up the list, because it might, you know, impact things as we
might
go
change,
along.
Yeah. Yeah. The next one is very interesting.
Okay,
so our next one is Suki.
Ooh. Okay, right, so I am now thinking fairly sure it's not Suki. My theory still comes back to her trying to get the pub, and I think Peter was recruited as part of the plan to get the pub.
Oh my god. That I literally like shouted at the screen for Friday's episode.
When Kira and Peter met.
Oh my god! Such a curveball. I was not expecting that.
It was an exciting thing. So what's your explanation for how Peter is involved, and what do you think Kira and Suki are up to?
I've got nothing. I'm completely mind blown. I'm just like,
wow.
So excited. There's a rental van. There's blood in the rental van. Peter's involved somehow. I have no idea.
Yeah, the blood in the van, I can't figure out how it fits with my theory. But I think there will be an explanation. I mean, it could be the case that Peter did it and also is involved in Suki and Kirat's plan as well.
Yeah. There was something that came into my head with the blood in the van.
Yeah.
And I think this is before Peter was on the screen. I was thinking about this, where I was like, is this actually something to do with Ruby? Because obviously, like, Kira and Stacey got together. Kira was aware of, like, Ruby having Stacey beaten up. And so I was like, oh, maybe there was something that went on at the same time that involved the van and some blood there. We haven't seen Martin and Ruby in like a little while, so
I love that. That would be super exciting. And actually, if we can see more of kind of Kira and Stacey before Stacey leaves, or what's the actor's name? Sorry,
Lacey Turner.
Lacey Turner, before Lacey Turner leaves. I would love that. And if, you know, Kira did a bit of a favour for Stacey, yeah, good on you, Kira.
Such a legend, such a beautiful legend.
Oh, man, they need to have babies.
They actually do. Oh, my God. I just thought Suki was so excellent again this week.
Yeah, I mean, I, as I say, was a little bit worried about her kind of villainy the last few weeks, to the point where it's like, I may, like, be gunning for your demise, but actually I found that she's, like, back in that, like, delicious, like, sweet spot again, where it's not too far, but, like, it's just far enough for you to be like, wow.
She is petty as well. Oh. I love that. That, like, she saw William stealing and she was like, I'm calling the police.
Yeah. Just like, and she's petty, but also still does the kind of grand plan scheming so well.
Yeah, literally the perfect villain.
She's all about the details, which is what I love. And that's a real contrast with Phil.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think they've done a really good job of kind of like bringing someone very refreshing onto the square after like so many years of Phil Mitchell dominance.
And Phil's like haphazard approach to like dominance, like so many loose ends get left absolutely everywhere and all of his plans go wrong in some shape or form. That to have like a super competent gangster is like amazing.
Yeah, really excellent. I massively enjoyed a conversation with Callum when she was getting questioned about everything.
Oh my God, so salty. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it was just so brilliant when she was like, I hope you're asking all these questions of your boyfriend, which I think, fair point.
Oh, 100%. That scene also makes me think as well, is that, you know, often the best characters have this kind of like slightly campy, like nature about them, like where they drop a bit of sauce like here and there, just a little bit salty, a bit sassy, like it's brilliant.
Yeah, really, really excellent. Just want to say on that as well, I think it's so funny. I've got no problem with it at all. I think it's brilliant. I think it's hilarious that it's Jack and Callum doing the investigation into who tried to kill Ian, and also that Ash is the main doctor dealing with him.
Yeah, I know. It's absurd. Like, it's
yeah, it's absurd and it's brilliant. I love it.
Actually, did you, going back to the clip that we heard from Jean earlier saying about, you know, there's criminals around every corner, it just made me think again, like, how do Jack and Callum, like, both think that they can kind of be on the square and like do their jobs, because they don't also go fully corrupt as well. It's just they seem to know like all of this shit is happening around them, like, and it just doesn't really make any sense to me.
It's surely unsustainable.
It's not sustainable. I mean, Jack, I think, has maybe found a more manageable way to deal with it, while Callum is just like a kind of deer caught in the headlights.
Totally. There was a scene this week where like Ben was in the kitchen and just Callum walks into the house in his full police uniform. And I was just like, this is absurd. Like, this cannot carry on. Like, there's a cop living in the Mitchell household.
Yeah, it's absurd. Also, get him out of that fucking uniform.
Oh, it's disgusting, isn't it? He looks so bad in it. I mean, they all look terrible in it, but God.
It's so gross. It's so gross.
Terrible fit. Absolutely awful.
Absolutely terrible.
So, I mean, do you reckon Suki did it?
No.
Do you reckon she planned it?
No, I think there is a possibility that in, you know, the kind of, in the scheming that Kira and Peter were doing, that one of them did something, made a mistake. But I don't think if a mistake happened that Suki knows about it.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I've got no insight into what's going on there, but I'm extremely excited about it.
Una, you have to have insight because we're...
No, I don't want... I just want to live in the moment now.
But what about the ranking, though? Where are you going to put any of these people on the ranking?
Oh, I don't know. Let's just carry on going through it and maybe it'll become clear.
Okay, so with these guys, it's a straight don't know.
I don't think they did it.
Okay.
I think there's something else going on.
Okay, all right, fine.
Okay, next on the list, we've got... Bobby Beale, one-time murderer Bobby Beale.
Oh, poor Bobby.
Oh, Bobby, yeah.
Oh, dear, yeah. I'm glad that, like, finally somebody who's, like, remotely bothered has noticed his OCD and his issues.
Yeah. Yeah, some very unobservant people around, right?
Literally, the boy is like tapping chairs and furniture, yeah, and his head, and like, how, like, have, you know, what, like, Ikra, like, you know, she goes to mosque with him, prays with him. She surely would have noticed by now something is up. Like, it's.
Well, I mean, Ikra doesn't care about anyone, though, does she?
Well, yeah, but Ash is a doctor. And yeah, her only insight into Bobby was basically to be like, yeah, I think he did it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Not very empathetic, is it?
No. Yeah. Bullshit.
Just want to say again, I mean, I've kind of flagged up that I'm not, you know, I don't know a lot about OCD, but there are moments where I'm like, I don't really know if this is how OCD works or if this is a good representation. Again, they kind of like used him being sensibly cautious around the issue of coronavirus as like an indication of him mentally like deteriorating. So I had him in the hospital like using his hand sanitizer, and it's like,
no.
I think probably using hand sanitizer in a hospital without a pandemic, very good idea. In the middle of a pandemic, really excellent idea.
I think what they've done with Bobby is really unfair, where he obviously has some kind of OCD, right? It's not just the kick that he's taking precautions while other people aren't. But like, they could have just dropped this whole hand sanitizer thing, because like, if he does have an issue, then it's the people around him that are exacerbating it. Like, and it's really unfair to like...
Very unfair. Very weird.
Right, completely.
And I also kind of felt like, you know, if you're listening to this and you know anything about OCD and you want to tweet us and let us know, please do. My other question was like, when he was kind of in the police station being like, I did this, I made this happen. And my knowledge of OCD, again, limited, I'm not sure that like people who have OCD like literally would logically say like, I didn't count to five and then this thing happened and so I'm responsible. Like, I think that's a feeling they have and it's a compulsion, but like, I'm not sure most people with OCD would like explain that to someone as something that they like actually believe to be fact in the world, you know?
Yeah, agreed. I, what I was kind of thinking from that scene is that I hope if they explore it, they kind of look at what other kind of exacerbating like factor has kind of combined with his OCD, because I agree with you, like, well, I say agree with you, and both of us are coming from a place of like being like non-experts.
Yeah.
But from what I've kind of seen and understood about it, there's a kind of rationality and irrationality to it. Like, there's a kind of rational side that acknowledges the irrationality of it, while Bobby had like fully lent into the irrationality of like, you know, the kind of OCD habits that he'd developed. So I, you know, he, obviously alongside the OCD, he's having hallucinations.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think...
Which is a thing that's happened before.
Right. So I think it's got to be a combination of those two things like compounding each other.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I hope that's what we learn about, and they don't fully just put it on the idea of him like developing these OCD habits like in isolation of anything else.
Yeah, same. And maybe I'm reading too much into it. It's just like a couple of times this week where I was like, I feel a little bit uncomfortable about this portrayal of this situation. But do you think that Bobby did it?
No, Bobby didn't do it, no.
Right, well, he was with Imran, wasn't he? He was just hanging out with his mate, having a nice time.
Poor Bobby.
Poor little Bobby.
Yeah.
So it looks like, you know, because last week we were talking about maybe the possibility of Bobby and Peter kind of having done it together, or Peter manipulating Bobby into hurting Ian. It looks like that's not happening now. It looks like Bobby has a pretty solid alibi, clearly wasn't there, although does feel responsible, and Peter maybe has something to do with it, but it looks like completely independently of Bobby.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was very smart this week that they dropped in where Peter said something about him not being in Ian's will, and then Kathy corrected him on that situation, because that was one of the big things that was like driving Peter's anger.
I missed that. What happened?
So they were in the hospital, and I think it was we haven't talked about this. It was just after Sharon and Ian got married. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
And it was just after that, and then Peter had gone out with Bobby, and he was kind of complaining about Sharon getting all the money. Kathy came out and was like, what's wrong with you? And then Pete was like, I know I'm not in the will anyway. And Kathy was like, no, you're not. Bobby's in Ian's will. You're in my will. So they had obviously like divided up the wealth that way.
Yeah, and you can imagine this was some scheme of Ian to avoid inheritance tax. So
yeah, probably.
Like, Peter's an idiot.
Peter is an idiot. And well, I mean, so let's talk about the next person on our list. Who is Peter?
Yeah, Peter is thoroughly dislikable, and I kind of am into it now. I think it could be Peter, yeah.
He's day by day a more and more believable son of Ian Beale.
Yeah, he's a... Well, he is. Yeah, he is. Yeah, I was going to say he is and he isn't, but actually I guess he is in his own way, because he's juvenile, petulant, a brat, like entitled... Got a
victim complex for no reason.
Right, absolutely. One thing he hasn't got, which I guess Ian does have to a certain extent, is that he hasn't really got any work ethic.
Yeah, true. Yeah, what does he do?
He's just lazy. He's so lazy. And look, I am into people being lazy, but like, what I'm not into is being lazy and not accepting the consequences of being lazy.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, he used to be a personal trainer, didn't he?
But come on, what a shit business that was.
Yeah, that was shit. So he was a personal trainer for a bit. I feel, wasn't he working on the market stall for a bit?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do anything. He gets an allowance from his broke dad.
Yeah, what a loser. God.
And also, we got the scenes of, like, you know, Lauren and the fire and, like, his kid. And surely that should have engendered some self-reflection on his part to go, fuck, I need to be in a better position that if my family need me, I can do something about it.
He's not even paying child support, is he?
He does nothing.
No, which is fine. It's fine to be broke, but like, there's no need for him to be broke. He's got plenty of opportunities around him.
Oh, God, yeah. He's not a victim of circumstance at all. Like, he is really just can't be arsed. I think the thing that bothers me, again, you know, not, you know, I don't see it as like, you know, a kind of, oh, as a man, he needs to look after his family. But like, you know, as somebody with a kid, he needs to be at least making some kind of effort to look like he's kind of bothered about making sure they've got some level of support, like mutual support, right, between him and Lauren. But he just is like, his reaction to him feeling helpless in that situation was to just completely go on this like rampage.
So is he Ian Beale, but worse?
I think he's worse, yeah, because I think Ian has grown into this like, bastard that he is, while Peter's got there pretty fucking early.
He has, hasn't he? Although, you know, obviously I didn't watch EastEnders way back in the day when Ian was the same age. I don't know if he was quite as terrible.
I think he was. I watched some of the kind of classic EastEnders, but there is... Peter's a bit sinister, right?
Yeah, he's very sinister.
Yeah, and I don't think Ian... has got the same level of being sinister as Peter.
Yeah, I feel like Ian, he's just completely and totally selfish. Whereas like Peter is very selfish, very self-absorbed, but like I think particularly like the callousness that he's displayed towards Bobby and his willingness to manipulate Bobby is like, that's really quite horrible.
Yeah, it's so gross. And also the fact that Bobby takes it, and yet that doesn't kind of make Peter realize, oh God, I'm like just kicking like a kitten here. Like, it's not even like there's a challenge to any of this. Like, he literally like said the meanest things about Bobby in front of Bobby to Kathy, and Bobby still is there to kind of, you know, lap it up, to take it. I mean, and Bobby does the same with Ian as well. And obviously Ian abuses that relationship as well. But like, yeah, Peter's a shit.
He is a shit. Is he a shit who tried to kill his dad, though?
In my mind, very possible, yes.
Okay. Oh, my God. Exciting. I mean, I'm just totally thrown by the rental van and the partnership with Kira, to be honest.
What is your take? I'm not letting you, you know, get away with not giving your verdict.
Well, I don't know. I feel like... I sort of was starting to wonder, did Peter and Tina somehow team up in the kind of first half of beating up Ian?
Ooh, like a wrestling match tag team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what would have happened next. I wonder if there's going to be some sort of, like, I mean, I think we are going to get a flashback episode. I hope so. Like, is it just going to be an absolutely, like, ridiculously long night of, like, they started off with the fight in the house, and maybe, like, Tina and Peter, like, bundled him into Kirat's van. Maybe they drove him out to some, like, warehouse in the Docklands, like, tortured him a bit and then brought him back, and then he's finally kind of finished off.
I don't think they could show that EastEnders episode until, like, after 10 o'clock, though.
I'll have to do, like, a Hollyoaks late night version.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I would quite like it if there wasn't a single character responsible.
Yeah.
And it was a secret held by, like, lots of people on the square. So, like, if it is the case that lots of people contributed to it and they kind of all get away with it, then I'm kind of fine with that.
Yeah, I would be very up for that. Yeah. I think we should move on to our number one suspect.
Woo! Here she is.
Sharon.
Let me correct you there. Sharon Beale.
Sharon Beale. What the fuck happened this week?
I am shook. I am completely shook.
I could not believe it.
I mean, okay, right. Okay, first question.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she agree to marry Ian?
Because she wants the Vic.
Okay, yeah, agreed.
She wants the Vic and she wants the cover for the fact that she did it.
Yeah, 100%. And I wonder if it's even, I'm going to say worse than that. I don't want to say worse, but, like, even kind of bigger than that is that it's all part of tormenting Ian, and marrying him means getting the Vic, but getting the Vic in a way that leaves him possibly with nothing.
I completely agree. Yeah, I think she is building up to, like, a big fuck you Ian scene where she's like, I never loved you, you're disgusting, you killed my son, now I have all your stuff.
What? Right, okay, I have a new theory.
Tell me about it.
Woo! Okay, here we go. It's wild. It is absolutely wild. I think Sharon and Phil did it.
Yes, totally agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I actually saw someone on Twitter say this, like, the day after we'd recorded our last episode, and I was immediately like, yeah, I agree. I'm totally swayed by that straight away.
This is a good moment to give a shout out to one of our very, very lovely fans, Kylie, who reminded us a bit about kind of Phil's involvement in all of this. And I think that's kind of set us maybe both on a path to thinking this was a team effort from Sharon and Phil.
Yeah, such an insight from Kylie. I was just straight away like, yes, yeah, that's definitely got to be what it is. Also, another bit of evidence for this theory, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So obviously Sharon kind of discovers, I'm putting that in air quotes, discovers Ian in the Vic. And then she calls the ambulance, calls Kathy. Kathy comes over and then Sharon's like, there's no pulse, but hasn't checked. It's clear that she hasn't checked. So I think she's saying that because Phil's done it on her behalf.
Exactly.
And she expected him to be dead and he didn't do the job.
Yeah, but what she didn't know is when Phil was going to do it. And that's why I think we got the first scene of Sharon coming down the stairs and calling out for Ian. Because there's no reason for her to call out to Ian in an empty pub, right? Because who's she doing that for?
Yeah.
So I don't think she knew when Phil was going to do it. But once she saw that Phil had done it, then she was like, okay, this was the plan. I'm just going to sit here and just wait it out.
I've got a question for you.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Do you think that there's anyone else that Sharon could have been in league with? Like, say it's not Phil. Could it be someone else?
Okay, Phil is very much like the top of my suspects for who would have collaborated with Sharon. If it's not Phil, the next best person I could think of is possibly Linda.
Oh, Linda. Oh, my God. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
I mean, I've literally just thought of it, so it might be crap. But did you have someone else in mind?
Well, I mean, I literally have just thought of this now.
Yeah.
Could it be Sharon and Dottie?
Oh, yes.
Because actually, I think they would make a really good, like, pair. for something like this.
And I think it kind of fits into what we were saying before, is that Dottie had already laid the groundwork.
Yeah.
Sharon just needed an extra small bit of the puzzle. Once she got it, maybe goes to speak to Dottie to apologize, to understand a bit more about what happened, and then it all develops from there.
Yeah, and I think that that would be, if they did go down that route, like, it would be a good way of kind of, like, doing right by Dottie as a character. Like, obviously, you know, I've always said, I don't really like Dottie as a character. I kind of find her just hard to understand. I don't understand her motivations. Like, I'm just kind of find her a bit boring. But they kind of haven't been fair. Like, she's had all these meandering storylines, and it looks like things are going to get really dramatic, and then they don't. So for them to kind of, like, bring this back to Dottie, I think would be a nice move for that character.
This is huge. I still am on Sharon and Phil, but this is a massive close second for me now.
Oh my God. So exciting. I just have to mention Sharon's wedding outfit was incredible.
Was she just in a normal blouse and stuff, no?
She was wearing, like, a black dress. She was dressed for a funeral.
Which is probably a hidden meaning in that as well.
Yeah, probably. I think we should just listen to a little clip of Sharon just being, like, an absolute badass to Kathy.
Let's do it.
Kathy, why don't you go home? I can stay.
No. What I'm trying to say is that now he's through the operation, my family won't cope with any more falling out, Sharon. You are going to get this marriage annulled.
I've been thinking the exact same. But when Ian thought he was dying, it was me that he wanted. And he's got a long road ahead of him, hasn't he? And being married your best friend, well, that ain't such a bad option, not at our age.
Are you saying you won't?
No. I'm saying I can't. Look, I'm sorry, Kathy, I'm not trying to be harsh, but it ain't your decision. And I don't have to be there for all your family. Just my husband.
Woo!
My husband. Oh, wow. My God.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Delicious.
What a week. Just incredible.
Oh, my God. How are we going to do our next segment?
There's so many to choose from. It's very, very difficult.
All right, let's try. Let's get into it.
Okay. Nav. Who is your EastEnder of the week?
Okay, I'm saying it. It's maybe left field, maybe not that left field for you, but maybe for the listeners. It's Jean.
Yes, Jean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just giving her a little round of applause, yeah.
Yeah, just that kind of quiet, common sense, you know. She's not getting herself involved with all of the Slater nonsense happening in the household, which I love. I love all the Slater nonsense. I also love Jean's, like, slight detachment from it.
Yeah, she just makes me laugh so much. I just find it so entertaining.
Brilliant.
It reminded me a little bit this week of Christmas, I think 2 years ago or maybe three, where Alfie, like, fell down the stairs and died, but then didn't die.
Right.
And Jean was kind of doing that same role of just trying to pretend that everything's normal. And there was that scene when she came in with a tray of tea, cups of tea, and just, like, stepped over Alfie's body on the floor.
Right.
And was like, who wants a cup of tea?
We know it's gone too far with her trying to pretend things are normal when she busts out the sausage surprise.
Yeah, always.
I think she's found this kind of beautiful medium between pretending things are normal, but there was a lot of kind of acknowledgement of the situation in her little speech this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is that thing of just, like, resigning herself to the level of insane that everything seems to constantly be at, which I think we can all really, like, identify with at this point in 2020.
It's a life approach that we all need to adopt. So thank
Absolutely.
You, Jean, for modelling it for us. But who is your EastEnder of the week?
Well, I think I've kind of already given a hint, but my EastEnder of the week this week is Suki.
Yeah. Shout out to Balvinda. Hopefully she's still listening. Just incredible.
It was particularly for that conversation with Callum where she's just got such disdain for everyone, really, but particularly for the police and particularly for kind of like low-ranking, bumbling police officers like Callum. It was just so enjoyable to watch. And I love seeing her and Kira together as well. Like, we haven't seen that much of that the last few weeks. But I think that dynamic, that mother and son dynamic, is really, really fascinating. And I want to see more of it.
Right. And I think she's got this thing about like Kira being her eldest and him being like the natural inheritor of her empire.
Yeah. And him also needing to be 100% subservient to her at all times.
Right. So what a week. What a brilliant week.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a bold suggestion and say, given that a lot of what we've been doing the last two podcasts are predictions, should we just skip it again this week?
I think... yes, let's skip it. But there is one thing I said at the beginning of the podcast that maybe I would say something for the predictions at the end. So I want to say it before we end.
Do it.
We talked about Ben right at the start. It's quite a vague prediction. I think there's a possibility that maybe Ben is kind of in on it as well. I don't think he did it, but I think that he knows more about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can see that he probably... I think the big likelihood for me is that he left him for dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe he discovered what happened at the last minute, like went over to like see what was happening or try and intervene and then didn't.
Or he actually went over to attack Ian himself and then saw somebody had got there before him.
Oh my God. I think that's a distinct possibility as well.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think his involvement is very likely.
Yeah. Yes.
Woo!
Oh, what an exciting time. I said it last week. I'll say it again. I just love the EastEnders run up to Christmas. It makes me so happy.
Exciting times. 2 weeks to EastEnders Christmas.
Yes. The most important day of the year, EastEnders Christmas Day, also happens to coincidentally be real life Christmas Day.
Hey, you know, some people celebrate apparently real Christmas, but we know what's happening on Christmas that's important.
Yeah, 25th of December, EastEnders Christmas Day.
Here we go. Well, thank you for listening, everyone, and hopefully you'll tune in again next week.
Yeah, we'll be back with more predictions.
Oh my God. Bye, guys.
Bye.